ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः मुखं करोति वाचालं पङ्गुं लङ्घायते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुदीनतारिणं परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीचैतन्येश्वरं नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे नमो महावेदन्याय कृष्णप्रेम प्रदायते कृष्णाय कृष्णचैतन्या नाम्ने गौरहत्युषे नमः पञ्चतत्त्वात्मकं कृष्णं भक्तरूपस्वरूपकं भक्तावतारं भक्ताख्यं नमामि भक्तशक्तिकं हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकाकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तुते सप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्ण हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्ण. सो लास्ट टाइम वी वर डिस्कसिंग फ्रॉम भगवद गीता चैप्टर 5 टेक्स्ट 21 थ्रू टेक्स्ट 23. So we'll continue from text 24 onwards. So text 24. Yo anta sukho antara rama tatha antara jyotir evaya sa yogi brahma nirvanam brahma bhuto adigachati. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. One whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the Supreme, and ultimately he attains the Supreme. So here, Lord Krishna is describing further, continuing with the qualities of somebody situated in self-realization, how to attain the liberation from material bondage. So, continuing with further qualifications or characteristics of such person who is situated in the principle of Karma Yoga. So, such person is not looking for happiness outside in the material world, but he is looking for happiness within himself, for in the terms of self-realization. So, he rejoices within and his aim is self-realization. Such a person is actually the perfect mystic. Sa yogi brahma nirvanam, such a person, he attains the Supreme. So the most important qualification which is mentioned here is a karma yogi, he is situated in happiness within himself for in terms of self-realization. He is not looking for external happiness. So what does external happiness mean? We all are looking for happiness outside within this material world. either we are looking for happiness through senses, or we are looking happiness for satisfying our ego. So in both ways, one is looking for happiness outside. So if we get the happiness out of our sense object, by the eyes, by the ears, by the tongue, with all these senses and their sense object, it leads to some sort of happiness. And then there is happiness at the level of ego. That is, if we are getting the praise from people outside, if we are getting some sort of name and fame, if people are glorifying us, if somebody has some sort of fan following. So that is deriving happiness at the level of ego. Like the Bollywood, Hollywood stars or the sports people. So their happiness is seeing some people glorifying them, right? Praising them. But for a person who is situated in self-realization, he is not looking for happiness outside in all these objects. He is looking for happiness, which is the inner happiness due to being connected with Krishna. But as we come in the devotional process also, we are hung up sometime with the external happiness or like the external success. Somebody may be doing some devotional services, which is bringing some sort of name and fame for that person. Like somebody is preaching, giving class, somebody is doing kirtan, and if the people are glorifying, the person may be deriving some sort of happiness out of those devotional activities also. Sometimes a devotee, a preacher may think, oh, I have made so many devotees, and all these devotees are glorifying me, they praise me so much. So that is also happiness, actually at a level of ego. And here the word which Krishna uses is Tatha Antara Jyotir. Antara Jyotir means the light within. Antara Jyotir. So what does this light, inner light mean? The inner light means the realization which comes from within due to being situated in knowledge, due to being situated in proper connection with Krishna. So when we get that inner realization, that ultimately leads to happiness when we are doing chanting. If the happiness is coming out because of our connection with Krishna, that is real happiness. And the realization comes because of humility. Without humility, one may get a lot of knowledge. We may read the scripture, we may hear the classes. We may get a lot of knowledge in that way. But unless one has humility, he does not get the actual realization. So along with knowledge, along with being situated in devotional service, one need to develop this humility. What does humility actually mean? That not having the pride, not becoming the boss, not being considering ourselves as the doer, but staying as a servitor mode, as a servant mode. That I am the servant of all other devotees. I am Das Dasanudas. That philosophy, if one imbibes that principle, so with that humility, then one can get some inner realization. And then with that humility, when somebody is performing devotional service, that really leads to the ultimate happiness within inside the heart. For example, considering the example of humility now, what is real humility? We see a tree. When the tree is without the fruit, all the branches are standing erect up. And when the fruit starts maturing, when the tree is filled with the fruits and the fruit becomes more ripened, then all the branches, they tend to bend down. So the branches bent down with ripened fruit, it means when somebody has a lot of maturity, he gets the humility. So same way in the devotional service also, more we engage in service, more we engage in devotional activities, it should lead to the humility in the heart. But rather than humility in the heart, if our devotional activities itself are causing pride in the heart, then that is a very dangerous situation. And Krishna does not actually like that situation when we are filled with pride. So one should always remember the philosophy of Das Dasanudas. What does that mean? I am the servant of the servant of the servants of the Lord. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this principle nicely in his Shikshashtakam also. The third verse and the fourth verse of Shikshashtakam emphasize this point where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says one should not accept any sort of name and fame. One should be more humble than the blade of grass, tolerant than the tree. And one should not seek out for any name and fame, any higher birth, any wealth, association of beautiful women. Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavitam va jagadish kamaye mam janmani janmani ishware bhavatad bhakti rahetu kitvai. My only desire is to be engaged in your service. I do not want higher birth. Na dhanam, I don't want any wealth.
Disha.
I don't want any higher wealth. I don't want association of beautiful women. Kavitamba, I don't want the glorification by other people or the followers. So that is the principle. If one is able to give up those tendencies and have the genuine humility in the heart, with those qualifications, when somebody engages in devotional activities in service of Krishna, then it leads to the real happiness, which is the inner happiness Krishna is talking about here in this verse. Now, when we engage in service also, service was also of different type, and that also depends on the level of one's humility or the mood of surrender. So what are the different type of services? So sometimes it happens that people are interested in doing some service, but they want to do the service only which is very visible, so that people can see them doing that service, which lead to their praise and glorification. For example, sometimes there are a lot of services, and there are many people around who are sort of considered as devotees engaged in services. So there are a lot of servants available, but still no service is accomplished. So इसको क्या बोलते हैं कि सेवा करने वाले बहुत दिख रहे हैं, पर कोई सर्विस दिखाई नहीं दे रहा कि कुछ काम हुआ है. And same way the second class is, second situation is, there are many servants also seen, and the service is also seen. सेवा करने वाले भी बहुत दिखाई दे रहे हैं और सर्विस भी दिखाई दे रही है, सेवा हुई भी दिखाई दे रही है. एंड द थर्ड कैटेगरी इज सेवा दिखाई दे रही है पर सेवा करने वाला दिखाई नहीं दे रहा. सो नाउ आउट ऑफ दीज थ्री विच इज ऑफ द हाइएस्ट क्वालिटी इन विच द सर्विस इज सीन बट हु हैज डन द सर्विस दैट इज नॉट सीन. दैट इज द मूड ऑफ ह्यूमिलिटी. बट लॉट ऑफ टाइम इट सो हैपन्स दैट एवरीबडी वॉन्ट टू डू सम सर्विस where his service is seen, somebody is clicking the picture that, oh, this person is doing so much service. So for example, if a spiritual master is visiting, and in that time there are many devotees who are willing to engage in services, some people will be willing to just wander around the spiritual master and be visible in front of him. And there are many other services which are in the background, but nobody wants to engage in those kind of services because there is no visibility. So the real mood of humility is when the service is seen, but who has done the service, that is not seen. And the classical example we hear from the pastimes of Goswamis in Vrindavan, one of them is Narottam Das Thakur, a very high class devotee. And what was his service? His service was, he accepted Lokanath Goswami as his spiritual master, his guru. And to please his guru, to render some service to guru, he noticed that Lokanath Goswami, every morning, he will go to the forest area to attend the call of nature. And when Lokanath Goswami has evacuated, and he will go take bath in the river, and in his absence, then Narottam Das Thakur will go there and he will clean that place. And next day when Lokanath Goswami will come, he will see, oh, this place is very clean and there is no previous day's Vishta is seen. So he will be very surprised, and this was going on for so many days. Ultimately, Lokanath Goswami, he thought, let me see who is doing such a menial service for me, cleaning the place where I come to pass out, to evacuate. So he hid behind the bushes, and that time Narottam Das Thakur came with the broom to clean that area. And Lokanath Goswami came and he came out the bushes and he glorified Narottam Das Thakur that your service is very glorious. You have such a humble service attitude towards the person whom you consider as your spiritual master. So that is the kind of mood one should develop if we really want to follow in the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and follow his instructions. And when we engage in that way in the service, that's what Krishna is saying. That person who is not looking for happiness externally, but who rejoices within, who is getting that happiness within because of being connected with Krishna, that person is already liberated from material bondage. He attains to the Supreme Lord. And continuing with the next verse, text 25, Labhante Brahma Nirvanam Rashay Kshina Kalmashah Chinna Dvidha Yathatmanah Sarva Bhute Hite Ratah. Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose minds are engaged within, who are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings, and who are free from all sins, achieve liberation in the Supreme. Now, this is another very classical verse and very important point what Krishna is mentioning here, further describing the qualification of a person who is eligible for liberation. So there are four particular qualities mentioned here. So I will go one by one. So the first one is Krishna describes Kshina Kalmashah. He is free from sins. All his sins have been eradicated. Chinna dvidha, all his doubts have been removed. He is free from doubts or the dualities which arise because of doubts. Yata atmanaha, whose minds are disciplined, who is basically engaged in the process of self-realization. And sarva bhuta hite rataha, who is engaged in the welfare of all living entities. So, first of all, one need to be free from all the sins, and sin is basically of two type here, we can say. One is which is the mature sinful reaction, and the one which is situated in the form of seed in the heart, bijam. So bijam and kutam, one has the tendencies in the heart to commit sinful activity, and the other one is one who has matured in the form of sinful reaction. So one need to remove all these sinful tendencies in the heart. One may become a brahmana by taking diksha, but if the tendencies in the heart are still there, which are like that of a shudra, so the person, even though being considered as a brahmana, being engaged in the duties of a brahmana, but his activities are still at an abominable level. For example, when we say one need to follow its varnashrama system, and that is based on the mode of nature one has acquired. And so one's nature is something, but person is acting as something different. So for example, one's nature may be of a shudra, of doing as a menial work as a servant. But if he, out of some reservation system, like we say arakshan, so based on reservation system, he gets a seat into the medical college and he becomes a doctor. But his real nature is as that of a thief. So what will that person do even though he become a doctor? So he will still remain a thief in the white coat. He may try to steal other people's organ from the heart or from the body. That's why all these cases come, right, in the hospital when the doctors were stealing the organs from person and selling those organs. But why does that happen? Because even though the person has got a degree of a doctor, but his real nature is of that of a Shudra. He has those tendencies, sinful tendency of stealing from here and there. So that tendency, that nature will continue. So one need to remove those sinful tendencies from the heart. Chinna dvidha, one need to be free from doubt. He need to be situated in perfect knowledge so that all the dualities have been removed. And one's mind should be disciplined. So we were discussing the 3D, the mantra last time, which is 3D means discrimination, determination and discipline. Right, so one need to become disciplined. And how one become disciplined? By following some sort of regulation. Sleeping at a particular time, waking up at a particular time, eating throughout the day on a particular time. So making all the activities more regulated. And the most important point which Krishna mentions here is Sarva Bhuta Hite Rataha. One should be engaged in the welfare of all living entities. So now there are two aspects of this. It's not that engaged in the welfare of certain class of people who are my near and dear ones, who are serving me in some capacity, so I will do something good for them. Here Krishna says, Sarva Bhuta Hite Rata. He is engaged in the welfare of all living entities. And what is the real welfare, first of all? Sometimes people think, welfare means helping the poor person, giving them clothes, giving them food, giving them shelter, giving them medicine. Yes, that is welfare activity. That is welfare activity at the level of bodily comfort. But that is not the ultimate, the real welfare activity. Because if somebody is hungry, we may give him food. But after 4 hours, 6 hours, he will again get hungry. Somebody does not have proper clothes, we may once give him clothes, but those clothes will again become dirty, the clothes may again become torn out. That is not the real welfare activity. What is the real welfare activity? Here in this material world, everybody is suffering because of their forgotten real identity, that they are the sons of Krishna, they are the servants of Krishna. If they are connected with Krishna, then they can get real happiness. So everybody in this material world is suffering because of forgetting their real identity. So the real welfare activity is to give the knowledge about who we are, what is our connection with the Supreme, and help them develop our lost connection with our Supreme Father. So that is real welfare activity. So somebody who is engaged in that, Krishna says, who preaches about my nature, my glories to others, there is nobody more dear to me than that person. So the person who has developed these qualities, that person attains to liberation, free from material bondage. Now up to this point, Krishna is describing the qualities of a person engaged in Karma Yoga. So if you remember, this chapter began with the question of Arjuna. Arjuna asked the question, what is better? Is Karma Yoga is better or Karma Sannyas is better? If engaging in the devotional service is better or giving up all the activities, renouncing all the duties, is that better? And Krishna answered that Karma Yoga and Karma Sannyas both ultimately lead to the same goal. But out of the two, Karma Yoga is better. Right? So here, up to here, Krishna was describing Karma Yoga by staying in the world while engaging in our Swadharma. One need to take up to the Sanatana Dharma also, engage in our real eternal duty, which is serving Krishna. So one should not be attached to the result of one's work. The real renunciation means giving up the result of one's action, not the renunciation of work itself. But there are some people in this world who reject the duties altogether, the worldly duties altogether. They don't want to take up any social obligation, any worldly duties. They completely want to renounce everything and engage in some sort of spiritual activity. So here in text 26 to 28, now Krishna is going to speak about those people who take up to karma sannyas, means they renounce the worldly duties altogether. And what are their characteristics and how do they engage, in what sort of activities they engage? So text 26, Krishna says, Tamakrodha vimuktatmana yatinam yatachetasam abhito brahma nirvanam vartate viditatmanam. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in supreme in the very near future. Kama krodha vimuktatmana, the person who is completely free from anger and all sort of material desire. Kama means not just the lust or the sex desire. Kama means any sort of material desire. And krodha means anger, because when the desires are not fulfilled, it leads to anger. So one who is free from all sort of desire and free from anger, yatinam yat chetasam. So such sort of renounced people. So yatinam here Prabhupada writes yatinam of as saintly person. And the yatis mean sannyasi. So who has completely renounced everything and taken sannyas order. So yatinam yat chetasam. So who has full control over mind. So what are the activities of a person who has taken up to the process of sannyas? He has full control over mind. He is completely free from desire and he is completely free from anger. So the sannyasis possess these qualities or not, that is a different story. But Krishna here is saying those are the qualities of a sannyasi. Abhito brahma nirvanam, and such a person is assured of liberation in the supreme in very near future. So we often generally have this misconception that my external circumstances are the reasons for lack of peace in my life. Right? People generally blame their circumstances, or because of my family members I'm in trouble, because of my job situation I have this problem, because of my financial situation I have this problem. So we blame all sort of our external circumstances for lack of peace in our lives. And we hope that one day all my situation will become very conducive to have peace of mind. But here Krishna is describing the peace of mind is the inner state. It's not dependent on the external situation. And how one can attain actual peaceful situation? It is the product of purified senses, mind and intelligence. When our senses, mind and intelligence are purified, that leads to the actual peace. Otherwise, no matter how much wealth somebody may have, how many followers somebody may have, how much fame somebody may have, it does not still lead to the peace of mind. And Krishna has stressed so much in this chapter also, and in 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita also, which we read earlier, some of the verses. Krishna says somebody who is able to tolerate this fame and infamy, honor and dishonor, he is able to stay peaceful. He is eligible for getting liberation. And when, what is this fame and infamy or honor and dishonor? Because we are looking at the external circumstances for our peaceful situation or happiness. We look, if we think, if somebody glorifies me, if somebody honors me, then I will be happy or I will be peaceful. And we consider dishonor, something as dishonor. But generally, what does dishonor really mean in terms of general opinion? Sometimes people consider dishonor as not being honored. Right? If somebody has not given us proper honor, we think, oh, somebody has insulted me or he has shown me disrespect. It's not that disrespect, it is just that somebody has not given proper respect or glorified properly. But we, because of our ego, we start considering it as dishonor. So one should be free from these desires and the situation of anger and fully controlled in mind, which makes him eligible for attaining liberation and happiness and peace in this life. So the sannyasis, with their mind and thoughts turned inward towards the Paramatma aspect, they find the ocean of peace within. And it is independent of all the external circumstances. So whenever all the internal faculties, the internal machinery is in order, like the senses, mind, intelligence, everything is purified, then they experience the same peace everywhere. If somebody has realized the peace inside, then he is able to see the peace and happiness all around. And in that way, he is liberated in this world itself. And further, describing the symptoms of a person who accepts the order of karma sannyas, what are their further qualifications or their characteristics? Shutting out all external sense objects, keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows, suspending the inward and outward breath within the nostrils, and thus controlling the mind, senses and intelligence. The transcendentalist aiming at liberation become free from desire, fear and anger. One who is always in this state is certainly liberated. So here Krishna further describes the people who accept the order of karma sannyas, what are their activities generally? So generally, people who have given up the world, given up this material world, mostly they adopt to the process of Ashtanga Yoga. And in that state, they go to the secluded place and they try to engage in this Ashtanga Yoga process, which is Asana, Pranayama, Yamaniyam. So they will sit down at a place and try to cut down the external activities from all the senses. So keeping the eyes and vision concentrated between the two eyebrows. Because the sannyasis, when they are engaging in this Ashtanga Yoga process, if they sit in a process of meditation to meditate on the Supreme within the heart as Paramatma, if the sannyasi is completely closing the eye, there is always fear of falling asleep. And if the eyes are open, then there is always risk of eyes moving here and there and becoming distracted. So they take to the process of concentrating between the two eyebrows or on the nostrils. And then they try to control their inward and outward breath. So in that way, they try to control their mind and senses and intelligence. And they try to focus on the Supreme Lord within their heart. So if somebody is able to successfully engage in that process, he becomes eligible to attain liberation, freedom from bondage in this material world. But that situation, that state of Ashtanga Yoga, which is Yama, Niyam, Asana, Pranayam, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi, so this Ashtanga Yoga process, it's very, very difficult to practice in this particular age and time. So the process of Dhyana Yoga, which Krishna is going to speak much more detail in the coming verses. Here Krishna has just moved the thought process, bringing from Karma Yoga to Karma Sannyas. And the sannyasis, they generally adopt to the process of Ashtanga Yoga. And but Krishna, everywhere, wherever Krishna is describing some other topic, be it the topic of Karma Yoga, be it the topic of Jnana Yoga, Krishna ultimately conclude it with the aspect of Bhakti Yoga. Because without introducing the principle of Bhakti, one cannot get the ultimate success in any of the path of related to spiritual perfection. So the next verse, which is the conclusion of this Karma Sannyasa Yoga, here Krishna adds the element of Bhakti. Krishna says, no matter what somebody is practicing, either he is practicing the principle of Karma Yoga or Karma Sannyas, unless one connects with the Supreme Lord, with the element of Bhakti in that, there is no guarantee of success, or there is no actually way of acquiring the full success on that path. Krishna described, Bhoktaram Yagya Tapsam, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram, Suhrida Sarva Bhutanam, Gyatva Mam Shantim Richati. Prabhupada described this verse as peace formula. If we really want to attain peace in this material world, how one should engage in Krishna consciousness? What sort of activities or what sort of consciousness one need to develop? Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam. So a person in full consciousness of me, knowing me to be the ultimate beneficiary of all sacrifices and austerities, the Supreme Lord of all planets and demigods, and the benefactor and well-wisher of all living entities, attains peace from the pangs of material miseries. So as I said, Prabhupada quotes this verse many, many times in his lectures and his writings. And he described this verse as the ultimate peace formula. And what is this peace formula here? Accepting Krishna as the ultimate beneficiary of all the sacrifices. Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam. All sort of yagyas or all sort of tapa, austerity, Krishna is the ultimate enjoyer. Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. He is the Supreme Lord of all planets and the Devi Devatas. Suhridam Sarva Bhutana. He is the well-wisher of all living entities. Gyatva Mam. Krishna says, if somebody knows me in that way, understands me in that way, Shantim Richati, he attains the real peace, the unlimited peace. So what does it really mean, Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam? The people perform so many yagyas, so many of austerities, but people don't really understand who is the enjoyer behind all those yagyas or austerities. People may be doing yagyas for various Devi Devatas. They may be offering the food stuff to various Devi Devatas. But Krishna is the ultimate enjoyer behind everything. So when we say one should offer the food to God and then eat the remnants as prasad, now that specifically means offering the foodstuff to the Supreme Lord, Krishna. If somebody is desiring to offer the foodstuff to any other Devi Devatas, first that foodstuff should be offered to Krishna and then that can be offered to any other Devi Devata. And then that food offered to other Devi Devatas, After being offered to Krishna, that can be accepted as prasad. But if the foodstuff is directly offered to Devi Devatas, without being first offered to Krishna, from the Vaishnava point of view, that is still not considered as prasad. So Krishna is the enjoyer of all the yagyas and austerities. And sometimes people have this conception of offering the foodstuff to pitras, our ancestors who have passed away, right? So people offer some pindadan and food stuff to their pitras, and they accept the remnant or the offerings as prasad. But no food should be offered to the pitras or the ancestors without it first being offered to Krishna. So basically, Krishna's prasad should be offered to the ancestors for their well-being. Sometimes people will offer to their ancestors all sort of things, even the non-veg stuff and all that. They think, oh, my ancestor like to eat these type of foods, so we are offering them these foods during their anniversary or something, their death anniversary. But that is a whole concocted principle. The actual thing is one should offer the food to Lord Vishnu, and that prasad of Lord Vishnu should be offered to the ancestors. Then it is really meaningful and they get some benefit out of that. So Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasam, Krishna is the ultimate enjoyer. Then Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, he is the owner, the controller of all the various planets and even all the various Devi Devatas. So in 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna goes in much more detail that even though people worship many Devi Devatas, but and one may consider that worshipping any Devi Devata, ultimately the result will go to Krishna. So indirectly, they are worshipping me, but they are doing it in a wrong way. The people who worship the various Devi Devata, they go to the planets of Devi Devatas. People who worship me, they come to me. And people who worship the ghost and hobgoblins, they go to their planet. Krishna makes it very clear that he is the owner and the controller of all the planets and all the various Devi Devatas. And Suhradam Sarva Bhutanam, he is the real well-wisher of all living entities. See, we are many different type of friends. There is a Mitra, Suhrad, Sakha. All those have actually different meaning as per the Sanskrit terminology. It's not the same relation in all those different words. So Suhridam means who is very dear well-wisher of all living entities. Because in this material world, somebody may be friend, but their friendship is only up to the level when their mutual interests are being fulfilled. So tum meri peet khujao, main tumhari peet khujaunga. So that type of relationship in this material world. But with Krishna, it's not that sort of relationship. Krishna is there with us in all various pieces of life. Krishna does not leave us. Krishna is dearmost friend of a living entity who is in the body of a dog. He is in the body of a living entity who is a demigod. Krishna is accompanying everybody as Paramatma. If we give up this human form of life and become an animal in the next life, Krishna still does not give up us. He is still accompanying us, waiting for us to turn toward Krishna, to come back to Him. So if we understand Krishna's real nature from all those point of view, then one can attain real peace in this material world. Why we are in this material world in first place? Because of our desires to enjoy and our envious nature. So Krishna describes that in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 27. Ichha dvesha sammutthena dvanda mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantapaha. So in this material world, everybody is under illusion. And they are filled with dvandva, the dualities, the delusion arising from desire and envy. Ichha dvesha samutthena dvandva mohena bharata. And because of our desires to enjoy and because of our envious nature towards Krishna, we are wandering in this material world from one species of life to another. So as long as we seek happiness separate from Krishna, then it ultimately ends in misery. But if we seek happiness with Krishna, then we can get unimaginable, condensed happiness, which is there is no end to that happiness. And that is actually characteristics of bhakti, as described in Nectar of Devotion. It describes the characteristics of bhakti. So there are six particular characteristics of bhakti, which is kleshagni shubdha moksha lagudakritam sudurlabham chandra nanda visheshatma shri krishna akarshani cha saha. So these are six characteristics of bhakti. Kleshagni, the devotional service, it brings immediate relief from all kind of material distress. Now, it does not mean that when we engage in bhakti, all our suffering should be eradicated, should be nilled immediately. What does it really mean is, as we engage in devotional service, even though there are some disturbances within this material world, but we are prepared better at a mental and consciousness level to handle those distresses. It builds up our stamina to deal with those situations. So kleshagni, it gives relief from all sort of material distress. Shubdha, the devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. There is nothing more auspicious than engaging in devotional service. Moksha lagudha krita, the devotional service derides even the conception of impersonal liberation. Sudurlabha, devotional service is very rarely achieved. Even though we may see many people engaged in bhakti around us, but the level of pure bhakti is achieved by very few people. So it's sudurlabha. It's not only durlabha, it's sudurlabha. Chandrananda visheshatma. So that is the one which we were discussing. Engaging in bhakti, engaging in devotional service to Krishna, automatically gives one unlimited pleasure. And Shri Krishna Akarshini, the devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna. Krishna is not attracted by our wealth. Krishna is not attracted by our beauty. Krishna is not attracted by our material mundane knowledge. The only thing which attracts Krishna is our service attitude, with humility, with sincerity. So by engaging in devotional service, one can get unlimited happiness. So that's why Krishna introduced this verse here, to give the flavor that no matter what path one chooses, somebody takes to the process of karma yoga by staying in this world, doing his worldly duties as well as engaging in devotional service, or one, because of his level of advancement, detachment, he takes to the complete process of sannyas, karma sannyas, or one engages in jnana yoga, or one engages in dhyana yoga. But ultimately, one need to include this element of bhakti. And Krishna is doing that actually throughout Bhagavad Gita. He introduces this element of bhakti wherever he is discussing any other topic. So for example, in next chapter, which is Dhyana Yoga, where Krishna is describing this process of dhyana, meditation, the Ashtanga Yoga process. In that also, ultimately Krishna describes who is the real yogi. The real yogi is not one who is just sitting in the forest and meditating, who is not connected with the Supreme. The real yogi is one who is always connected with Krishna and engaging in his devotional service. Yogi nam api sarvesham madgate nantratmanah shraddhavan bhajate yomam same yukta tamomatah. Among all yogis, the one with great faith, who always abides in me, thinks of me within himself, and render transcendental loving service to me. Shraddhavan bhajate yomam. He is most intimately united with me. That is the highest of all. Tamohmataha. That is my opinion. That is Krishna is saying, that is my opinion, that who is the topmost yogi? One who is engaged in bhakti with full faith. And same way in 11th chapter, where Krishna is describing the opulences of the Supreme, there also Krishna concludes the bhakti is the topmost process. There Krishna says, Naham vedena tapasa, na danena na cha jnana, takhe evam vidho drashtum, drashtavan asi mam yataha. So the form which you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing serious penances, nor by charity, nor by any sort of worship. It is not by these means that one can see me as I am. Because Krishna displayed his universal form, and then ultimately he showed his beautiful Shyamasundar form in front of Arjuna. And Krishna is telling Arjuna that don't consider that you have been eligible to see my form because of some study of Vedas or undergoing some penances or charity or some sort of worship. Nobody can see my transcendental two-handed Shyamasundar form. I can be seen only by, Krishna says in the next verse, Bhaktyatvaya ananya shakya aham eva vidho Arjuna gyatum drishtum cha tatvenam praveshtum cha parantapah. Oh my dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service, bhaktyatva ananya, by undivided devotional service, I can be understood as I am standing before you. So Krishna again stresses here also, that only way to see Krishna face to face in his eternal, beautiful Shyamasundar form is by engaging in the process of bhakti. And then in the conclusion of Bhagavad Gita, also Krishna tells in 18th chapter, text 1855, I believe, Bhaktya mama bijanati yavanyashyatmi tatvatah tato mam tatvato gyatva vishte tadanantaram. So bhaktya mama bijanati, one can understand me as I am, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So everywhere throughout Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is adding the element of bhakti, that bhakti is the most important ingredient in all the various processes of spiritual life, be it karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga. Ultimately, without taking the support of bhakti, engaging in devotional service with humility and sincerity and with full faith, one cannot attain the ultimate success. In Bhagavad Gita, there are three divisions of Bhagavad Gita, so total 18 chapters. First six chapters are mainly dealing with Karma Yoga. And sixth chapter is Dhyana Yoga. So we can say Karma Yoga, Dhyana Yoga. And the last sixth chapter is more of Jnana Yoga. Krishna is describing the material nature, the modes of material nature, what kind of activities people do under the influence of these three modes. So first six chapters, Karma Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, last six chapters, Dhyana Yoga, Jnana Yoga, the middle six chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is chapter 7 through 12, Krishna is speaking primarily on Bhakti Yoga. So it's like a sandwich. So in a sandwich, there are two bread layers, the top and bottom. And in between, there is a patty, there is a sausage, some vegetables, some cream, some butter. So if somebody is biting only the top and bottom layer, which is just the bread, it does not derive much taste of that. But unless one gets to the middle portion, then he derives some taste, some happiness out of eating that burger. The same way in Bhagavad Gita, the middle portion, which is Krishna emphasizing on Bhakti Yoga, that is the real essence, the real cream of Bhagavad Gita. And again, another analogy is given of a king. When a king is traveling with his whole entourage. The king is not traveling in the front or at the complete back. The king will be in the middle. And in the front, there is some other vehicle, some other chariots and some other soldiers. And in the back also, there is an entourage with some soldiers, some chariots or some other sort of vehicles. And in the middle, the king's chariot will be there. So same way, Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga, the middle six chapters are like the king, the represented as a king. And the first six chapters and the last six chapters are the entourage, which is keeping the king in the middle. So Krishna is going to speak primarily on the confidential knowledge, which is engaging in bhakti, describing from chapter 7 through 12. And the 12th chapter is titled itself as Bhakti Yoga. So if we really want to attain peace in this life, we need to get connected with Krishna, considering Krishna to be our most dear well-wisher, most intimate friend, and the enjoyer of all our activities. So with that, I will stop here. If anybody has any comment, any question, please feel free to ask. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
You can go ahead, Prabhupada. I'll ask
you. Prabhu, all along in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna has mentioned concepts in a very definitive manner. But here, I have been hearing more of his opinions, his thoughts, rather than actually something very definitive. Is there a specific reason why he's doing that?
So, the way Krishna explains to Arjuna, he does not force anything on Arjuna. He is describing the various principles to Arjuna, and then Krishna will say, this is my opinion. So if you, now you can act as you like. So because at the end also, if we read Bhagavad Gita, right, at the end,
yep,
Krishna described to Arjuna, Isa Ichcha Tatha Kuru, like now you do as you like. Right, so Krishna does not say, okay, now I have explained to you everything, so you do as I say. So that's why Krishna is everywhere. He is saying, this is my opinion. So if you want to follow this, then you can follow. Otherwise, you can follow as you like. Because he is not stopping our minute independence. Krishna is willing to give the whole guidance. But it's up to us if we want to take that guidance or not. And Krishna does not force that.
Okay, fair enough, Prabhu. Thank you, Prabhu.
Okay. Hare Krishna, Prabhuji, Jagannath Naam, Ogurishu, Shurisha, Prabhupada, Maharaj. Thank you, Prabhuji, for a wonderful lecture. Just one comment and like two questions I have. First, the comment, I really like that example that you explained about the humility, how the tree, when it is laden with fruit, how it bows down, and that's a symbol of its humility, rather than when the tree is, doesn't have any flowers or fruits. So that time it is still so erect. And just reminded, I think this example was quoted in Srimad Bhagavatam's class this morning temple when we had, if I'm not mistaken. And also two questions. One question, I remember when you were speaking about the example of pure devotional service, and like there are different types of devotional services, and the one who is doesn't come in the limelight, and who, but still we see only the seva, only the service is seen, but the person who is doing the service is not seen. Now, how to come to that kind of level? How to do that? In the sense, even when we are small kids, like, so we are told you know, we are told that as parents we should encourage the kids to tell them, you know, that so that they can do it better. Now, even when we are doing service, I mean, there's a human tendency that when you are encouraged by the other, you tend to do more, and you that spurs you to do more. I know that concept of pure devotional service is selfless completely, but that encouragement when it is not there, and we are supposed to do it completely selflessly, even though nobody is, I hope you're getting my point. So how to come to that mood? I know that is the best mood, but how
right,
to
so,
do that?
Right. So generally, our mood is, I need encouragement, I need some motivation. So that is all right, because we are not at a very pure level as of now, right? We have not become pure devotees. So we need some sort of encouragement, inspiration, some encouraging words. But the way I was describing, so generally, we know that we should develop humility and we should not be seeking for praise and glorification, because ultimately Krishna, in his own ways, is going to recognize our services for sure. If somebody acknowledges it or does not acknowledge it, ultimately Krishna is going to acknowledge, and he will make arrangement for us to get inspiration and encouragement in some way or other. So the three type of services which I mentioned, first was ki seva karne wale, service karne wale bahut log dikh rahe hain, par phir bhi koi seva hui dikh nahi rahi. Right? So there are many people who are moving here and there, par kaam sabka sab waise ka waise hi pada hai, koi kaam hua nahi hai. So that is the very least, the lowest class of service attitude. Sab log bol rahe hain ki acha mujhe karne ki zarurat nahi hai, koi aur kar lega. Ek mere na karne se thodi kuch hota hai, baki bahut sare hain seva karne wale, so maybe somebody else will do it. So that is one attitude. So here I am not describing the three type of services actually. I am describing the three type of service attitude. So first type of service attitude, which is the lowest attitude, is why should I do anything, let others should do. There are many other people, why should I do? Right? So in that way, even though there are many people around, many devotees around, still nothing gets done. And the second category of service attitude, second type of service attitude, is one is willing to do the service only when his service is seen by others. When he or she knows that, oh, somebody is watching me doing this, so let me do it nicely. Because in that way, our mindset is somebody is seeing, and when they see me doing something, they will acknowledge me. They will glorify me. Oh, I am doing it so nicely. Just say when Guru Maharaj is here, lot of devotees want to do the service which is seen by Guru Maharaj. When he will come from walk, somebody want to remove his shoes, or somebody want to give him shoes, or that kind of service, or they want to just be around Guru Maharaj. So that is the type of service that one is doing the service which is very visible. And they will not want to do the services which Maharaj himself does not see. Like when he has gone on walk, somebody has to clean his room, somebody need to do his laundry, somebody need to do his clothes ironing. So those type of services are not seen. But somebody has that mood set that, oh, I want to please Guru Maharaj, even though I will not be directly seen, but let me do this type of services which will be pleasing to my Guru, my spiritual master, which will be pleasing to the devotees. So the second type of service attitude is, one is willing to do the services only which are seen by others so he can get some glorification. And the third type of service attitude is, one is doing the service which nobody knows who has done the service, but the service is completed. Right? So one is not looking for his personal glorification that, see, Maharaj may never know who cleaned my room today, who did my laundry today, who did my clothes ironing today. So those type of services, that service attitude, that I am not looking for direct praise from my Guru, but I want to please him, I want to do something, some meaningful service for him. So that was the three type of service attitude I was describing. And the best service attitude is done out of humility without seeking for any praise or any glorification in return. But Krishna is in charge. Krishna is witnessing everything. Ultimately, Krishna makes arrangement who need to be acknowledged. Right, so that was your question, how we can develop that mood. Because we, from our childhood, we have that mindset that we need some word of inspiration, some acknowledgement, so we can do our service better. But we don't have to worry about that, because Krishna is watching everything, and Krishna will make arrangements that our service will be recognized, even though not now, maybe later. And later on, maybe Krishna will give us purification in the heart, that the tendency itself will be removed from the heart. That why you are seeking for external glorification. Why should I seek glorification from other people around me, other devotees around me, when my Guru himself is acknowledging my service, when Krishna himself is acknowledging my service?
Yeah, very nicely put. So it's basically the service is between ourselves and Krishna. So we are actually doing it for him. So why we are looking out for a kind of appreciation from anybody else?
Right. So it is easy said, but it's hard to implement, right? So we need to come at the level of implementation. So same way, many things are easy to speak. We speak about humility. We speak about the humble service attitude. We speak about the Dasa Dasa Anudas principle. People can give a 2-hour, 3-hour class on that topic, Dasa Dasa Anudas principle. But when it comes to putting in practice, many people fail in that. Because it takes a very sincere practice or inner realization, as Krishna was describing in text 24. When we are internally connected with Krishna, when we have not just the theoretical knowledge, with humility, that knowledge transforms into realization, then only one can come to that level of putting in practice. Otherwise, saying Das Das Anudas, oh, we should be very humble, we should be serving the devotees, it's very easy. But when it comes to putting in practice, we all back up. No, I'm too busy, I have this thing, I have that thing, I cannot do that. So it's very difficult to put in practice.
Can you give some practical, very simple things that we can start with, very, 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 very basic, simple, not something very pure sense, that we can start to bring about some kind of a change in us if we are suffering with this issue?
So the very practical thing one should see is, or one should know is, ultimately whatever I am doing, my motive should be to please Krishna, not to please my own whims. Right? And to please Krishna means to please the devotees. If I am not able to please the devotees, my service to Krishna is incomplete. So it's not about taking care of my own needs and desires, but it's to give comfort to the devotees so that they can engage in their services. So if you remember, when Maharaj came, so many out-of-town devotees came. What pleased Maharaj the most was that all the out-of-town devotees were taken care of. If we had not done that, it will not have pleased Maharaj. So that was one of the very important aspects, to take care of the devotees, to please the devotees. And the practical thing to do for that is, it's very basic, small things. Putting others before us, right? That is the basic principle of humility. Not thinking of me first, but thinking of others first. Thinking of everybody, rather than thinking of myself or people who are intimately connected with me only.
Yeah.
So I say humility does not mean to think low of ourselves, but it is just to think less of ourselves. Right? We think less about ourselves, we think more about others.
Yeah. Kind of understanding, but it's hard to implement, but yeah. All right. Yeah. One more question is that thing which you talked about, the pin down and other things. Now, all that you said that first it has to be offered to Krishna and then be done, the pin down. But I was under the impression that if one is doing into this Krishna consciousness, then all the other rituals of pin down are not needed. So am I wrong in that assumption?
No. You are correct in that. I am speaking for the point of view of people who are engaged in those ritualistic karmakandic activities. That it's not that one is offering the food to their ancestors, but they should offer the remnant of food offered to Krishna. So if we want to feed our ancestors, right, our purvaj, jinka dehant ho chuka hai, agar unko kuch खाना खिलाना है, कुछ भोजन ऑफर करना है, तो वो भगवान को ऑफर किया हुआ भोजन उनको ऑफर करना चाहिए, भगवान का प्रसाद उनको ऑफर करना चाहिए, ताकि उनको कुछ एक्चुअल बेनिफिट मिले.
इट्स नॉट दैट. I understood that, but what about the people, if I'm not doing that during the short time, what about my ancestors? How are they going to be fed then?
See, the people, if somebody becomes a devotee, his seven generations are liberated, previous and past, or past and future. Right? So if we become devotee, all our ancestors will get the benefit anyway. So we don't have to... If we really want to give benefit to our ancestors, so in the Shraddha time, one can offer them, do their Shraddha ceremony, but in a Krishna conscious way. Right? Offer them the food which is offered to Krishna, chant for them. So doing the Shraddha ceremony from a Krishna conscious perspective, which will give benefit to them also. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also performed the Shraddha ceremony for his father when he went to Gaya. It's not that a devotee should become a very hard-hearted or something, or these are all, I don't have to do anything. So this is a personal choice. If somebody is willing to do, if somebody desire to do, he can do. But one should do in a proper consciousness. And there is no point of giving it up just because of some sentiment or following it because of some sentiment. As this statement comes in Nectar of Instruction, right? Giving up the rules and regulation or following the rules of regulation, both without proper understanding. Both are wrong.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
This is related to service, Prabhu. Dasa Dasananda. Actually, Krishna is clearly said that, like, if one is rendering service to me as a devotee of me, which is most pleasing to me? That's what Krishna says. And when we say the serving the servants of Krishna, the other point is that these 33 crore devotees are also servants of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, we are trying to please Guru Maharaj by serving Guru Maharaj in so many ways, so many things. So same way, one can have the idea of, okay, Krishna is supreme, and then the 33 crore devatas are under him, is under his guidance, and they follow him, and they're serving Krishna. And in that sense, if one serve any demigods, is there any issue?
No, if with that understanding somebody is serving a demigod, let him serve. But how many people are serving the demigods with that mindset, with that understanding? People go to Devi Devatas with the understanding that everybody is equal, everybody is same, and the purpose of serving the Devi Devatas is to get some benefit from them. Not to serve them, but just to please them by doing something, and they have to exchange in return. Mm-hmm. Basically, it becomes a business deal. I did something for you, you did do something for me. मैंने तुम्हें एक नारियल चलाया डॉलर दे दो
You are right. In general, that is correct. But there is many families, many devotees, many people who do service only, not expecting anything. This dedicated service they do. Like many temple
and that way, so ultimately by rendering service to any Devi Devata, slowly, slowly, slowly they come to Krishna. They come to the proper understanding. So Krishna says people approach various Devi Devata. And if somebody has a little faith in any particular Devi Devata, I make that faith strong. So that they can approach that particular Devi Devata and ultimately they will come to me. Because even though they are serving the Devi Devatas, indirectly they are serving me. Right now they are doing in a wrong way. But if somebody has a strong faith and somebody is doing it with a service attitude without any business deal,
this is what I'm trying to do. Actually, with respect to Devi Devatas, like 33 crore Devi Devatas, when we say we are serving to Devi Devatas, that means indirect way of serving to Krishna, but we are serving to Guru Maharaj. He is also devotee of Krishna and Devi Devata, devotee of Krishna. If we are serving to Guru Maharaj, that is also indirect way of serving.
No. See here, Devi Devatas are doing their duty. They are not directly engaged in serving Krishna in the way of preaching Krishna's message. But the Guru, he is directly engaged in Krishna's service. His only business is to speak about Krishna, to tell people to engage in service of Krishna, to connect with Krishna. So that is the difference. And in Bhagavatam, it describes that actually, Krishna mentions in Bhagavatam at one place, where it says, I am more pleased with the service to my devotees rather than by directly serving me. So when somebody serves my devotee, I become more pleased. So I will give you that particular verse. I can give. There are many actually like that, not just one.
Okay. So basically when Krishna says serving to my devotee, that means only the 100% dedicated devotees, not the 33 crores devatas who are like servants.
Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita also, the one who is most dear to me is one who is engaged in preaching about me, engaged in telling others about me. Right? It's in text 8 in the ending verses. I don't remember the verse number right now. I can check that. Yeah, text 69. Na chatasman manushyesu kashchin me priyah kritmah bhavita na cha me tasmad anya priya taro bhuvi. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. And who is that? In the previous verse, Krishna described, the one who is always, one who explains the supreme secret to the devotees, pure devotional service is guaranteed at the end. He will come back to me. So that person, there is no one more dear to me than that person. So that's why serving to Guru Maharaj directly versus serving to Devi Devatas, among that service to Guru is much, much, much higher, because Guru is directly engaged in service of Krishna to preach his message, to engage other in the service of Krishna, to explain to them about the secrets of bhakti.
Okay, this point makes Thanks, Prabhu. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So I will stop here. It's quite late. So thank you very much. Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anant Koti Vaishnav Vrinda ki jai.